This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. In the wake of the September 11th terrorist attacks, the Clear Channel Radio Network, which owns approximately 1,200 stations nationwide, issued a list of approximately 150 songs with lyrics it deemed inappropriate for airplay in the polarized political climate. The list included everything from Don McLean's American Pie to Elton John's Benny and the Jets, as well as all songs by the rock group Rage Against the Machine. Also listed were several songs with particularly anti-war messages, such as John Lennon's Imagine and Edwin Starr's War. Though Clear Channel ultimately backed down, saying the list was only intended to be a suggestion rather than a company directive, the move raised concerns among many civil libertarians who questioned whether the events of September 11th were being used to stifle democratic freedom of expression. In the second half of our show today, we'll take a look at music and censorship during times of war and conflict. Stopping the Music is the fifth and final part of the Radio Netherlands series, War of Words. It's produced by Dira Sujan.
No one likes us, I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful?
This is the first time in any American conflict that a voice of dissent has not been aired through music. There have been some little sputters here and there, but these people, again, quickly chastised and written out of the media, and it's not taken seriously. Oh, they're just a musician. What do they know about politics?
It's too cold. South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one. There'll be no one left to blame.
It's one of the most underpublicized facts of censorship, that music censorship exists every bit as much as, written word censorship and political censorship.
It's so un-American to be required to all speak with one voice. If there's anything that's traditionally American, is that we actually have speak with a diversity of voices. But now under this administration and the current regime, we're really being required to all sort of march in lockstep to this pounding of the war drum.
They all hate us anyhow, so let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
A recent conference hosted by FreeMuse in Copenhagen brought together musicians, journalists, and ethnomusicologists from the far corners of the globe to talk about music and censorship. Music producer Gerald Seligman from New York is a founder member of FreeMuse.
When you look internationally at the rise of nationalism and the breakup of so many different regions that had been together, ex-Yugoslavia, and the way national identity is used as a way of joining people together, but also as a way of prejudice against other groups of people. And such an important part of national identity is the musical culture. Because many of these cultures, it's the musical culture that's the strongest of all. It's sometimes stronger than the literary culture or whatever else. So sometimes musicians can find themselves on the wrong side of a political divide. For example, Kurdish music in Turkey was completely banned off the radio and it wasn't allowed to be performed publicly because the Kurdish language wasn't allowed to be taught in Turkish schools until their recent interest in getting into the EU and that a change because of that. So that's obviously a censorship issue, that a people can't represent the music, their cultural heritage, through their music. Then also there's the Algerian Berber musician, Lounis Matoub, who was very vocally critical of the Algerian government and was living in exile in Paris. And he was assassinated for his political beliefs that he expressed through highly political, very explicitly political songs. There are other instances when where artists are imprisoned for representing musical cultures. And then, of course, there's the milder forms of censorship, sometimes through retail, sometimes through record companies, sometimes through governments, of not allowing certain music to be presented. I lived in Brazil for many years, and in Brazil, during the dictatorship, music was a very popular weapon of people resisting the dictatorship. and there was real censorship there. Many articles, artists put in exile, some put in prison, some tortured. So from subtle examples of music not being allowed to be played on the radio to extreme examples like Lunis Matu being assassinated, the gamut of censorship of music is every bit as vast and unfortunately common as the discrimination against people for their political beliefs or against writers.
Discussions at the conference centered on the different forms of censorship enforced on music in times of conflict, for example, the ongoing Palestinian-Israeli conflict. In an almost perfect irony, one of the invited guests, Palestinian Rania Elias, who lives in Ramallah, could not get permission to leave the country to make an appearance. Speaking on a crackly line from her home, she said it was the 12th international conference she'd been invited to and couldn't attend this year. Other speakers were Noam Ben-Zeev, a Jewish-Israeli journalist, Amal Marcus, a Palestinian-Israeli musician, and Bashar Shamut, a Palestinian sound engineer living in Germany.
When we talk about censorship in Israel, we have to differentiate between the two populations. The Palestinian population, this is the minority of 19-20%, and the majority of Israeli Jewish population. I know a little bit about what goes on in the Palestinian side. I know that there is censorship, very strong censorship, on two levels. One is the classical censorship. You know, if you want to publish something, you want to record, to have your song or to have your music broadcast in the radio, TV or things like that, you give it to a commission, they look at it, they decide for you whether it's good or not, if you can take it or not. Okay. Another sort of silencing the Palestinian population is the lack of infrastructure, of musical infrastructure for them. So music education, public budgeting, government giving funds, venues, recording industries. It's not a market. In Israel radio, you don't get Arabic music. So it doesn't sell. It won't sell to the 6.5 million people's market. So it's a small market. So nobody touches it because it's foreign language and because other things. There's maybe half an hour Arabic program on TV, and Arabic is a formal language of Israel.
The record companies, as example, in Israel, they are not producing any record company of Palestinian singer. And the Palestinian singers don't have their own record companies. Let's take in consider that I'm talking about Palestinians in Israel. There are million Arabs. There are 90% of the population in Israel. That then the daily life, we live together with the Jews. We have a lot of common life together. We study in the university together, use the same hospital, the same transportation. We live together. But meanwhile, my people, the Palestinian people, are under siege.
Due to the recent escalations in the conflict, the Israeli authorities, and specifically the Israeli military, sieges all the towns and villages in the West Bank and Gaza. And this means that no one is allowed in or out with his, for example, with his own vehicle. You might be able to move under certain circumstances by foot. You have to imagine that around all these cities and villages, you have checkpoints that you have to pass and show your ID and so on. And logically, you cannot carry any other goods with you except this, what you really need. And of course, no books and no CDs are allowed in or out. And this is censorship practiced on the Palestinians in their daily life. On the other hand, there was a list which has been handed over to the Palestinian Broadcasting Corporation. This list was handed over from the Israeli authorities, and this list contained songs that are considered, according to the Israeli authorities, as violence encouraging. And these songs should not be broadcasted. And this list became longer and longer, and at the end, the Israeli authorities, you might remember, in early January 2002, the Israeli military decided to blow up the entire radio station, the Palestinian radio stations. And this is what's happened. Unfortunately, due to this act, a major part of the archive has been lost, which contains very important recordings.
يرفيق السهر يعود متكي على المخمل تتوجع وبتروح آخر دني وترجع تكتب وتمحي حدود يا
There is some kind of a self-censorship where the musicians themselves do not dare to criticize Arafat publicly.
Are musicians afraid of physical harm?
I don't know any specific case where musicians have been put in prison or so because of criticizing Arafat or the Palestinian Authority. However, I know some other cases of musicians which have been put in Israeli jails. For example, a colleague of ours should have been here at the conference, and her name is Rania Elias. Her husband has been put in prison for 3 months or 4 months some years ago because he made some songs during the first Intifada, and he was expressing the feelings of the Palestinian people by that time. Due to this act, he has been charged by the Israeli military forces, and he was put in prison for many months. And tortured.
To create in such a like atmosphere in my place is to be occupied all the time from the conflict and not to have enough opportunities to bring yourself, to express yourself in the media, and also to be a little bit depressed. You know, I have maybe 9 new songs now. I finished them and the war started back. And the song that was written was not about the immediate situation. It was songs about women's rights, song about growing up as a stranger in a faraway city and missing the homeland and the childhood, songs about my grandmother, songs about love also. And then suddenly when I want to release these songs and to work on it, my head is occupied with different things. I all the time is death around you. It's unbelievable how cruel is this death, how cruel is this bloodshed ongoing.
Basically, you have to imagine that there is no infrastructure for producing music at the moment. You cannot easily move from one place to another. And for example, we have a very good equipped modern digital studio, sound studio in Birzeit, which is only 10 kilometers away from Ramallah, and in which I used to make my productions there. And this studio is linked to the Birzeit University. And this is the most modern studio in the whole West Bank. We did a couple of music productions there, but since the Intifada started, we are not able to do any productions anymore because in Ramallah there are no really high-quality studios. So we used to get the musicians from Ramallah to Birzeit to make the recording, but now we can't do this at all due to the blockage and the siege of the towns. I mean, you can go from Ramallah to Birzeit by car, and then you have to stop the car, and then you have to continue by foot, and then you have to take another car. And now imagine that someone is carrying music instruments, contrabass, or whatever you want to use. So it's really, you cannot do this because it's a long way that you have to go by foot over hills and so on. So this is one thing. The other thing is the live performances, which used to take place in summer. So, of course, this was not able to take place this year and last year due to these recent circumstances, also including that the Israeli authorities in many times do not give any visa permissions for many of the musicians, especially those from Arab countries, to come and perform. So in that sense, the Palestinian cultural life has suffered a lot.
Censorship doesn't just limit itself to countries embroiled in open conflict or under stern dictatorships. Journalist Eric Nuzum and music attorney Robin Gross delivered papers at the conference to talk about the situation in the United States in the wake of September 11th.
Most of the censorship in America has not been explicit censorship, such as organized moves to ban songs or to prevent artists from playing. It falls into more of an implicit category, which is that the actions taken by people make it a very intolerant environment for musicians who are expressing dissenting opinions or may have things that have little direct connection to the events of September 11th, or patriotism, or the position of the United States when fighting against what it perceives as its enemies. So as a result, you have many things happening where artists changing the names of songs, leaving songs off of records, radio stations not wanting to play songs.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Clear Channel Communications in the United States, which is the largest owner of radio stations in the United States, owns a very large percentage of the radio stations in the United States. I think about a third of the major radio stations are owned by Clear Channel. Circulated a list that said, don't play these songs. And most of the songs had lyrics in them that were almost like comically literal to events.
What a wonderful world.
I Fall to Pieces, Crash Into Me.
Songs like Imagine by John Lennon, which is really a song about peace and love.
Jet Airliner, I'm Burning for You.
What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. Walk Like an Egyptian by the Bangles. Even St. Elmo's Fire, which is an instrumental song, was on this list of possibly objectionable songs, but they have absolutely nothing to do with terrorism or even violence in many cases.
I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Ooh, yeah.
I think a lot of what's going on in the U.S. is not really about preventing against terrorism, but more about exercising control over the kinds of ideas that the American public can have access to. And right now we're in a climate where the pounding of the war drum is deafening, and I don't think that the government and the corporations really want to be having the public listen to songs about peace and love. They'd much rather have the public up in arms in a frenzy about going to war.
The story broke about 3 days to a week after September 11th, the idea of Clear Channel had circulated this list after the 11th, and the heat got on Clear Channel to such a point that they actually decided to lie about it. And they said that they did not ban any songs, which technically is true, but in reality, they told their programmers, here's a list of songs, please exercise restraint when deciding whether to program these lyrically questionable songs.
And did the programmers comply?
Some made a big stink that they did. They ignored the email. Dozens of programmers acknowledged that when they received the email, they decided to pull some of the songs that are on the list. And while Clear Channel is correct in saying we didn't order them to do it, when you have one boss who's in charge of all these people, and the boss sends you an email asking you to exercise restraint, what are you going to do? You're going to exercise restraint.
I'm just an American boy. Raised on MTV and seen
also in America since September 11th, there has been a very pro-patriotic, pro-American mentality, more so than is normal, where all of a sudden, for a country that was founded on dissent against government, you can no longer have a dissenting opinion in America or you're considered unpatriotic and un-American. And while that's always been true to some degree, the mainstream level of that opinion is rather frightening. When someone says, well, maybe we shouldn't go after Iraq, all of a sudden that person is considered by the mainstream to be unpatriotic and deserving of condemnation or shunned, or their opinions have no value.
Chains around my feet. You don't understand, sometimes a man's got to fight for what he believes, and I believe God is great.
Stephen Earle, who's a Nashville, Tennessee singer-songwriter, He wrote a song about John Walker Lind, who is known in the United States as the American Taliban. He's the young man who decided to leave the United States to go fight the jihad. And Steve Earle's song simply tries to understand and to examine what could be going on in the mind of this young man that would cause him to want to forsake his own country and go somewhere else. 2 months before this song was even released, there were calls for it to be banned. There were death threats against the songwriter. Most radio stations won't play the song. And he was accused of being treasonous simply for trying to understand how this could happen. It's coming from those in power, and that includes the U.S. government, and that also includes the media and large corporations who own the media. And in some ways, it's not seen as being censorship per se because it's not government action, but it is the U.S. government that is creating the environment where this kind of activity is becoming more acceptable.
Now they're dragging me back with my headless sack to the land of the infidel.
The most ironic and impossible thing that the Prime Minister, General-in-Chief in the Army, is the manager of the broadcast authorities in Israel, the official channel that have half an hour a week for the Arabs. And you can imagine, if I am an Israeli citizen and I am invited to sing or to make something, interviews, how censored it will be. So I do not agree to go there and to make any interviews or to sing because my songs will be censored and they will check my lyrics, etc.
Depending on the situation, on the political situation, the music, the character of the music changes. I mean, the type of music which is being broadcasted day by day is different from one day to another, depending on the political situation. Palestine is a country, we do have a long musical tradition, but we do not have that many musicians and many musical groups and this functioning, really functioning musical scene or musical life. You might find a couple of Palestinian singers abroad, out of Palestine, in exile, and some of them who are living in Palestine. And generally, both musicians abroad and musicians inside the territories, their production or their works have very much a political character. But this doesn't always mean propaganda. I mean, if you're singing some kind of songs, saying how beautiful your homeland is not really propaganda. It's different than singing a song glorifying military attacks or fighting with guns and so on.
The Arabic music has been influencing Israeli music for 100 years. Most of the Israelis are Jews, descendants of Arab countries. They know this music very well. It's not the music, it's a Jewish state who is threatened by the Arabic idea. So the Arab is an enemy. This is the problem. The problem is that in Israel it is hard for the people to accept the other as an equal human being. That's the problem.
70% of the Jewish population, they came from the Arab world. It is not strange culture. And they still keep singing in their houses, Umm Kulthum, Farid al-Atrash, Abdul Wahab. I know that. Or they are hearing Jewish singers that sing in Hebrew but with Arabic melodies. You know, they translate the songs of famous classic Arab singers and they sing it in Hebrew. And they eat Arabic food. And they understand Arabic, they are everything. But something in the soul, in the heart, said they are the enemy. They hate us as Jews. And this is the problem that maybe also the Arab world make. They all the time say that they hate Israel, they hate Israel, they hate Israel, but they don't even try to understand that Israel exists and the Jews have the right to have their own state. What we can do, it's happening. Maybe it's the responsibility of both sides, for sure. But Israel also must learn how to respect the Arab world.
Most of the radio stations have been either blown up or demolished, and slowly radio stations are trying to reproduce programs and to go on air once again. But it is really very, very difficult, especially because it's hardly possible to get any equipment inside the territories at the moment. And, of course, the Palestinians are not able to produce their own transmitters, and so most of these radio stations have to look for some foreign suppliers, and this is really hard. There were four private radio stations in Ramallah, and I only know that two or three of them have restarted going on air. One or two of them actually go on, you can listen to their broadcast on the internet. But the program is very, very weak. They don't have their own productions. They only have some light music playing just to be, it's important to be on air, to be present.
Is there a protest on the part of Israeli musicians?
No, not at all. What we need is to hear the words of the sounds of the central important figures of the Israeli artists and musicians and intellectuals. That's what we need. And in Israel, traditionally, most of the intellectuals and artists are left-wingers, humanistic, and we don't hear them. In the past 2 years, we don't hear them.
There have been two notable exceptions in Israel, however, and although both have had to suffer the consequences for their political outspokenness, the two have felt the resistance of their fan base in different degrees.
There's one singer who protested. She's a very respectable and old singer, Yaffa Yarkoni. She's Israeli prize winner. That's the greatest prize you can get in Israel. For 50 years, she's been singing to soldiers, and she's singing marches and things like that. And she protested against, with harsh words, against the situation. And she got punished immediately, but not by governmental censorship. It's just all the media was pouncing on her, and she got terrible threats upon her life. And the concerts were cancelled because people just gave back the tickets. Daniel Barenboim is a very famous international conductor and pianist. And he's Israeli, speaks Hebrew. He doesn't live in Israel. And he went to Ramallah to play. Ramallah almost doesn't exist now. It's in ruins. He got threats, and the papers were against him, and tickets were given back, and so on. But for him, it's nothing. I mean, it's not like somebody like Yaffa Yarkoni, who's one day the world turns upside down for her.
If anything, it is the role of musicians and artists in a time such as this to examine the actions, to question society, and we're seeing the exact opposite. And it has to do, I think that's in large part because of the rampant fear that people have been instilled with by the government. And musicians are surprisingly unwilling to speak out on these issues. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with the way that the public is really worked up into such a frenzy. They're so freaked out that anyone who even questions the president's actions is being called unpatriotic or, in some cases, treasonous.
Even with the suicide bombing, that is terrible, they continue their daily life like nothing is happening. Instead of using the cultural life, the art, of treat the conflict by the art, there is silence. Silence from the world, from Europe, from America, silence from the Arab world, and silence from the majority of the Jews. And this silence and ignoring the situation will destroy all of us.
Yeah, I think there's one thing that I think the censors do get right, which is that music is dangerous because it has a way of reaching people and representing cultures in ways that people who want to absolute power can often find threatening.
Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett of KPFA, Keith Chalgian, and Reem Kathuda. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website or send us your check or money order to 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.